the institute is in of itself so difficult to navigate that even some of the best sort of administrative lawyers will ultimately get somewhat stuck in certain issues. So the scope of the act will, should it be enacted, will definitely aid practitioners. Hi everyone and welcome to Law Boot, a Fennec and Fennec Advocates podcast. The topic of the day is judicial review, specifically the Judicial Review Act, which is a proposed bill to reform the current system as we know it, drafted by INSL. Today I'm joined by Andrew Drago, president of INSL, who will give us some context as to the rationale and the reasons behind the need for this for this review and the new act. And we'll also address the current issues and why a new judicial review provision is required. So, hi Andrew. Before delving into sort of the nitty-gritty of the act, let's just give our listeners some context and some background as to how the system was back in the day and how we came to the current 469A as it stands.
So thank you, Jake, for that introduction. So firstly, I think we should start at defining or giving a very brief definition of judicial review. So judicial review is the ability of the courts to annul government decisions. It is the ability to find acts of the public administration unlawful and declare that particular government decision is null and void. So judicial review today is an essential element of our understanding of the rule of law, as it ensures that the government exercises its powers lawfully and that no abusive government decision goes unchecked and the fundamental tenet that no one is above the law. Now, I think to start giving our listeners the full picture, the historical path towards the current law on judicial review is quite relevant, as it shows that the tumultuous struggle between the judiciary and the executive branches of the state. And in fact, the law student in his first lessons in the law will be made to recite a famous case of Marbury versus Madison, wherein in the 1800s, the U.S. Supreme Court declared that the executive branch of government cannot go unscrutinized by the courts. And to bring these principles into a Maltese law context, such reasonings and principles were not always commonplace in the Maltese juridical system. And for example, as a starting point, we can mention the case of Busuttil versus La Prima Dei. So this is a case in the late 19th century, in the 1894, where a certain Mr. Busuttil sued the police, alleging that gold had been purloined during a raid in his garage. In this case, the court did not even go into the merits of the case, that is, whether this gold was stolen or not. It simply dismissed Mr. Busuttil's case, stating that the police is an emanation of the state, and therefore it could not be sued directly. If Mr. Busuttil could pinpoint a particular police officer who was responsible for allegedly stealing this gold, then he had to sue that particular police officer directly, however, not the police force as a whole. So basically here, the court was stating that the state was exempt from any responsibility when exercising statal functions. So this principle, this doctrine, is known as jure imperi, which means by the right of the sovereign. And thus, governmental action could never be questioned in a court of law. And this principle and exemption of the jure imperi stonewalled judicial review for 78 years until a decisive sentence delivered by Mr. Justice Caruana Karin in Lowell versus Caruana disseminated this doctrine, stating that the Euro Imperi does not apply any longer in Malta. So, fast forward a bit, and prior to 1995, Malta did not have a written law on judicial review. However, the courts still catered for this gap by applying principles of the UK common law, which allowed aggrieved individuals to challenge these abusive and unlawful acts of the administration in a court of law. Yet, obviously, as we will discuss in this podcast, governments have not been too fond of the courts meddling with executive decisions, of course, because it challenges the legal certainty of the public administration. So I think we have to go back to a particular case which was revolutionary.
Yeah, the infamous Blue Sister case,
exactly,
which Dr. Tonio Borch has mentioned so extensively back in the Ars Adis during second year.
Yes, so and with good cause, because this case was the reason which was the reason for first legislating on judicial review. However, unfortunately, although it was the case which pushed government to legislate on judicial review, it was not to give the right of judicial review, but rather to curb the right. And to give context, so in the 1980, the then Minister for Health imposed a condition on the renewal of the Blue Sisters hospital license, which was a hospital run by the Catholic Irish nuns and run on a quasi-charitable basis. Now, the condition imposed that at least half of these beds were to be made available to government free of charge. This would obviously render the hospital unsustainable to operate, and of course, the Blue Sisters, aggrieved with this government decision, applied to the court to annul this condition in the renewal of the hospital's license. And the court agreed with the Blue Sisters and found that this condition was arbitrary and unreasonable, as it effectively expropriated the hospital without any form of compensation. Now, in 1981, the government was quite dismayed by this court decision and enacted a law which stated that the courts could only inquire into the decisions of the administration when they breach an exact and specific provision of the law. What this effectively meant was that government could act unreasonably, abusively, and arbitrarily without any form of scrutiny by the courts. It also meant that government could act actively outside the law.
Therefore, the 1981 legislation essentially just restricted the realm of review. Then we fast forward to 1995, and then we have the what is now basically Article 469A, which is judicial review as we know it. Now let's get back on the main topic of the agenda. So the proposed bill addresses some of the pitfalls and some of the issues which we have with our current system of review. Starting with the first one, which is, as you define it in the bill, fragmentation. So nowadays we have the Article 469A, wherein one can seek judicial review of administrative action. So anything which falls under the definition of an administrative act can be challenged under 469A. Then we have another mode of review, which has somewhat been developed by the courts in terms of Article 2, Sub-Article 2 of the COCP, wherein one can challenge decisions of quasi-judicial bodies, such as boards and tribunals. And then we have the Actio Popularis, Article 116 of the Constitution, whereby any person without requiring juridical interest can challenge delegated legislation. So we have three modes of review for things which are arbitrarily different, but at the same time, they're quite related to one another. So what the Judicial Review Act seems to try and achieve is essentially a one-stop-shop remedy wherein all of these three avenues are combined into one.
So, yes, basically the three modes of review are confusing to students, they're confusing even to academics and even to advocates. And why am I saying this? Because cases have been lost on the basis of the choice of review. This notwithstanding that apart from judicial review as established in Article 469A, there are the various other forms of tribunal, such as the Administrative Review Tribunal, which further complicates the mode of review.
Yes, and speaking from experience, the issues between 469A and the Administrative Justice Act are already extremely difficult to navigate. But even just to deciding whether to lodge an action under 469A is difficult on its own, given that its nature of subsidiarity, you must make sure that there is no other remedy whatsoever which applies to your case. And as you will probably concur, whenever you're researching something and the answer is that there's nothing, it provides you with a lack of certainty. So even when lodging a 469A in general, the amount of research which needs to be undertaken to determine whether you must actually lodge a 469A is already a hassle in of itself, and you will ultimately never know whether there was actually another remedy which you could have gone to until the final judgment. So the fact that these issues between 469A, the Administrative Justice Act, and then we have another two modes of review result in a situation where the institute is in of itself so difficult to navigate that even some of the best sort of administrative lawyers will ultimately get somewhat stuck in certain issues. So the scope of the act should it be enacted will definitely aid practitioners, especially in determining what the proper remedy is, and will provide them with an element of legal certainty, because ultimately we will have only one action for review. We don't need to navigate through all these different sub actions, if you will.
Yes, and for one of the main issues and difficulties is that a lot of these rules in choosing whether to institute an actio popularis, an Article 116 case, or instituting an action under the remaining competence of the civil court, which is the Article 32.2 of the Code of Organization and Civil Procedure, is based on judicial doctrine. And this doctrine changes. For example, to mention one which has been a case which has been decided this month, wherein usually the jurisprudence states that to challenge an action, to challenge decisions of tribunals and quasi-judicial bodies and boards, etc., you go to Article 32.2 of the Code of Organization and Civil Procedure. However, in a case decided against the Sanctions Monitoring Board, which is a board established by law, the court accepted an Article 469A action. So, and this is a court of appeal. So we're in a situation where an advocate is faced with a choice of which court judgment to base his case upon, which, of course, this is not it lacks the legal certainty required to challenge these governmental decisions. And eventually, if the court finds that the plaintiff, the claimant in the case, filed his case in the wrong avenue, the case is thrown out. So it is only government who is benefiting from the current state of affairs. And to put out cases based on such a legal and technical formality goes against the principles of judicial review, which is supposed to be based on the merits. It's supposed to be on the lawfulness, not on choosing on what particular action you're going to make. And the difficulty also combines itself, makes it more harder, given the fact that sometimes it's difficult to establish between an administrative act as defined in Article 469A and other decisions. So this is a problem which is technical in nature. However, what we are proposing is a consolidation of these avenues of review.
So basically we're speaking about a consolidation and also, very importantly, a codification. So we have something written black on white in the law, as opposed to having to research various court judgments and determining which one to apply and which one to disregard. So moving on, another crucial issue in the ambit of judicial review, the scope of judicial review and the definition of a public authority. So a longstanding principle in judicial review is that it only applies to public authority. I cannot seek judicial review of an action performed by a private company, for example. But what about situations where that private company is exercising a public function, for example? This obviously leads to a situation where the government can potentially escape from liability by using a private company to perform services of a public nature, for example. So how does the proposed act tackle this issue?
Yeah, so first we have to understand that we're in an environment where many services previously delivered by public authorities are now being privatized or contracted out of to private suppliers. So to have a law which states that you can only review the decisions of public authorities when they are a direct emanation of the state, when it is defined in the strict terms of Article 469A only, is leaving a branch of administrative decisions, public law decisions, going unchecked. So what we are doing in the bill is giving a new definition to public authority. So the current definition states that the review can only be made to those branches of government and those bodies which are established by an act of parliament or by an order of the prime minister as well. And it does not cater for those bodies established under a law. So, for example, a governmental company cannot be reviewed by the courts, even if that company is owned, the majority shareholder of that company is government. So this is a loophole, which where basically government can decide to administer those needs which used to be administered by those body corporates established by law through government companies. And this should not be a way to escape judicial review. And in fact, certain courts have decided that, notwithstanding that the law is very clear that judicial review does not apply to these government-owned companies, certain courts have circumvented through, I would say, judicial activism, the current restraints. For example, Malta Industrial Parks Limited have been subjected to judicial review. The Gozo Channel Limited as well has been subjected to review. And the court even went to an extent of holding a casino which was empowered by law and the authorities to regulate its attendees in the current casino, given that it was exercising this form of authority of state-like function. The court also accepted that this casino should be subjected to judicial review.
And on that note, we once again have an issue with legal certainty. We have the law, which tells you one thing, and some judgments, which, in the ambit of fairness and principles of natural justice, etc., are trying to widen the definition. But once again, the practitioner is faced with the situation where you can never be completely certain as to the outcome of the case, given that the law is saying one thing and some judgments might be saying a completely different thing.
Yep, and that is the reason for bringing about this proposal, which we are basically stating that those corporations, those body corporates, which perform a public function should be reviewed under a court of law. But for this test to apply as well, we are also stating that where an organization, a society, a company is performing a function which, were it not for that company to be performing, the state would have to intervene, then that company would be regarded as a public authority and therefore subject to judicial review. And the counter argument would be, but why subject private entities to judicial review when traditionally judicial review only applied to public authorities, to government? And the reason is simple, that the current socio-political trend wherein we are privatizing privatizing the public sector, we have an ever-growing branch of administrative decisions which will remain unchecked. So I argue that extending review should not be regarded as a form of encroachment to the self-determination of these non-statutory bodies, of private entities, but it should be regarded as a safeguard against abuse from these entities, which ultimately they willingly recognize executive power.
So, in essence, what the bill is proposing is a substance over form approach, where it only matters what you are doing, what service you're providing, and the nature of that service, and not the form in which the relative company, body, corporate, etc., is providing such service. So, we have discussed fragmentation, we have discussed the scope of review on the definition of a public authority. Now, onto another extremely important issue in the context of judicial review, juridical interest. So we have a situation where under Article 116, an actio popularis to challenge delegated legislation does not require any juridical interest whatsoever. Now, if I understand correctly, the proposed bill does not seek to amend that in any way. So, in essence, the actio popularis will still remain available to any person which is ultimately interested in challenging the relative subsidiary legislation without the need of proving juridical interest, correct?
Yes, that is the case. And this emanates from the fact that where a constitutional form of right given to the individual challenging delegated legislation, it would be inconsistent with this jurisprudence, would create a constitutional question mark, so to say, if we were to now go back from this line of thought and say that to challenge delegated legislation, you need to prove juridical interest. So that is remaining as is.
So moving on to 469A, obviously the courts have affirmed that in order to lodge a 469A action, you need juridical interest. And one of the main issues is in the ambit of representative actions. So we're having NGOs who obviously represent their underlying cause. They try to open a 469A to contest a particular administrative act, but they cannot do so because, generally speaking, the courts have affirmed that they do not have juridical interest in the case, which is extremely, obviously, one of the biggest issues in the Institute of Judicial Review as it stands today. So how does the Judicial Review Act tackle those issues?
So, basically, we are proposing a new test of juridical interest, of legal standing, the ability to have the interest, the required interest, to bring about a case. So currently, to prove juridical interest, you have to prove that it is direct, that it is actual, that you have a juridical nature. It's very, very, it's based that you have to be personally affected by the case. But however, there are certain situations where an individual person is not affected by a government decision. And in this case, we can mention a case which was initiated by the Life Network Foundation, where they were challenging the sale of a particular morning after pill. Now, without going into the merits of whether this sale was lawful or not, without going into the details of whether they were wrong or whether they were right. However, the court said that as the foundation did not have a real interest in this case, then they do not have the ability to challenge this government decision. However, you have to ask yourself in this case, who would have been able to challenge this particular government decision? And the reality is that as this decision affects the totality of people, it affects society as a whole, then no one would be able to bring about the case. And obviously, this is it's a tautological argument. You cannot have a situation wherein the decision affects everyone equally, and therefore no one can bring about the case. So what we are proposing is that to bring about an action, you must show that you have a sufficient interest in the case, where basically this test is based on a UK common law test of legal standing, whereby you have to prove that the interest which you are bearing is not one which affects your patrimony directly or affects you legally in a particular way. However, you have a real reason for bringing about the action. And part of the sufficient interest test is also a representative interest test. So, for example, if you have an NGO which is bringing about a case which which the NGO itself is representing the merits about, then obviously it would have the standing, the required standing to bring about the case.
So the proposed act seems to implement a test which is somewhat similar to what we find in the planning legislation, correct?
With regards to environmental NGOs, yes. In fact, this is where the sufficient interest test also has seeped through Maltese law. So currently, environmental NGOs, through an EU directive, are able to challenge government decisions based on Article 469A. And there were several cases, such as the Ramblers cases, which Ramblers successfully managed to challenge government decisions based on Article 469A. So, but that was with regards to environmental NGOs due to the directive.
Now we're sort of trying to introduce a similar test in the more wide scope of judicial review as a whole.
Exactly.
Now, moving on to one of the final issues which we shall be speaking about today, which is the infamous 6 months of forfeiture, which judicial review is subject to. So, Article 469A can only be instituted within a period of 6 months from either the date of the relevant administrative act or from the date on which the person could have discovered of such administrative act. And obviously we have issues as well with cases which are referred to the ombudsman. So how does the proposed act seek to address and rectify these issues?
So basically, the proposed act seeks to reform two aspects of the time limitations with regards to judicial review. The first one is an extension of the time limit. And currently, you have to bring about an action within 6 months. We are arguing that 6 months is too restrictive for the simple reason that, one, the nature of how the public administration relates to the private citizen is one which, as time goes by, it is becoming more complex and it's becoming an ongoing relationship. So the private citizen establishes an ongoing relationship with the public administration. However, for the private citizen to be able to challenge government decisions, the act has to be final. So if the act is ongoing, the aggrieved individual cannot bring about the case. And sometimes it is very difficult to pinpoint the finality of an administrative act. So the 6 months may start to pass and the private citizen would not have realized that the act is concluded. Furthermore, when a person has not received an answer from a public authority, he has to presume that within those 2 months where he has not received an answer, that it is a refusal, a requirement which is not really known by the public, which serves as a problem. And also another impediment to the 6 month rule is that there is a particular article in the Code of Organization and Civil Procedure called Article 460, where basically you have to notify government of instituting a case 10 days prior. So it is further limited. So we are proposing that from 6 months, it be extended to 2 years to become on par with the same course of prescription with regards to damages.
Now, this is a very important point because even from a practical point of view, we already affirmed that the determination of the institution of a case under 469A is already incredibly difficult and turbulent on its own. So in practice, you will not have situations where a client will come to you and tell you about a particular administrative act directly on the day he was notified. So let's say a couple of months pass, you have the additional 10 days specified in Article 460, you have to conduct extremely detailed and precise research to determine if 469A is your proper avenue, and then you're left with little to no time to institute a very difficult case, because as we all know, an Article 469A case is definitely not an easy one, even just deciding which grounds and whether you can seek damages or just a declaratory effect. So the inclusion of a a less limited time frame will obviously help both the general public as well as practitioners in being able to properly file a judicial review case with the aim of getting the best possible outcome for their clients.
Yes, and another proposal with regards to the time limit is the suspension when a case is referred to the ombudsman or one of his several commissioners, be it the commissioner for education or the commissioner for planning or for health. So the reason stems that a normal case to be decided by the ombudsman takes around 9 months to conclude. So if the time limit is of 6 months, then obviously no advocate or no one would recommend to seek the ombudsman remedy, given the fact that whilst the ombudsman would be proceeding with the case, you are losing your time to institute the action.
So in essence, in the ambit of judicial review, the ombudsman is left somewhat powerless, because ultimately, if you risk going to the ombudsman and he doesn't give you a result or a remedy within 6 months, you basically have lost any possibility of challenging that decision.
Exactly, and this is not a good state of affairs, given the fact that the ombudsman is an office which is found in the constitution. It's a constitutional office, and INSL believes in the ombudsman remedy, and more cases should be referred to the ombudsman because it is an out-of-court remedy, and currently, due to this time limit, it is basically rendering, as you rightly said, the ombudsman futile, in the sense that no one would raise the case. And even more, the Ombudsman Act specifically states that when a case goes to court, the ombudsman would have to close the file. So basically, you have a situation where a client would go, the aggrieved person would go to the ombudsman. Once he starts noticing that the time period is going to elapse, he institutes an Article 469A action, and the ombudsman would be compelled to close the case file. So the ombudsman would be actually wasting, so to speak, the time deciding or planning a recommendation when eventually the case goes to court. So obviously a suspension within the time limit states that once the case is referred to the ombudsman, the time is suspended. Once the ombudsman delivers his final recommendation, the time for prescription starts to run again.
All right, so now as it stands in the law, nowadays it's 6 months, which are a period of forfeiture. So in the new 2 years, will the period be a period of forfeiture, or we're talking about prescription?
So basically, we're proposing a period of prescription, not forfeiture, given the fact that as we are proposing a suspension, given when cases are referred to the ombudsman, it is much more, in our view, it's more coherent and it makes more sense within the situation.
Exactly. So that is it from our end today. We have discussed sort of where are we currently with 469A, how it has developed, and what INSL is trying to achieve in its draft bill for the Judicial Review Act. So we've addressed 4 main issues, so fragmentation, the various types of review actions, which INSL is proposing that they become one complete remedy. And we've also discussed the definition of a public authority and widening it to adopt a more substance over form approach. Juridical interest, which in the context of Actio Popularis will not change, and including a new sufficient interest test similar to what we find in planning legislation in the scope of judicial review as a whole, and ultimately widening the time limit from a six-month period of forfeiture to a 2-year period of prescription, thereby allowing even the ombudsman remedy to be actually effective and allowing more time for any aggrieved person to actually file properly a judicial review case. That is it from our end. Thanks, Andrew, and thank you, INSL. And we hope to see you in our next episode of Law Boot.